Welcome to the Fantasy Golf Insider Podcast. I'm Jeff Bergerson, joined as always by Zachary Turcotte.
How's it going, my friend?
Doing well. It's U.S. Open hangover week this week, and we travel to TPC River Highlands, at least, which is a good course, and an elevated event, which has been nice following majors, at least, helps to recover with the hangover a little bit. Of course, you can find us at fantasygolfinsider.com for all of the best research tools you will find anywhere to help you build your lineups in fantasy golf, DFS golf, put together your betting cards each and every week. Be sure to check us out and also read our articles each week. We got several of them up. Let's talk a little bit about that U.S. Open, Zachary, before we dive into Travelers. It looked like a runaway. It didn't look possible that anyone's going to be able to catch Wyndham Clark on Sunday. And then all of a sudden, it looked like it was going to be possible before he kind of nutted up and took control of the tournament. Sammy Burns missed just barely a huge putt. But wasn't as close and dramatic as I was kind of hoping for.
Yeah, it was at least happy that there was a little bit of drama in the final round, because it didn't look like there was going to be really any. Burns had two chances there, 17 and 18, makeable putts. And for a guy who's really been just about the best putter on tour over the last 2 to 3 seasons, you'd have thought one of those was going down. Wyndham made an incredible putt on 16. That was a pretty amazing hole, because he's in the rough right off the tee, and you're thinking, gosh, there's just about no way think that he's even going to have a decent look at birdie.
You're thinking bogey there.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Can he even hack it out of here? And he did, and he had a decent approach shot. And what was that, 20 feet, 25 feet, somewhere in that range? Up the hill, then down the hill. I mean, just hit it perfect. Super, super clutch. And then he bogeyed 17 and kind of left the door open just a little bit, but, you know, closed it there on 18 and held on for the win. Nice win for him. He's been playing well. Kicking myself a little bit. He was a secondary player for me. I liked him quite a bit last week. So he was a guy that I had advised. Probably usually secondary guys are like 15 to 20%. Ownership for me, which would have gotten you ahead of the field if that's the direction that you ended up going. The U.S. Open history, he had the win there at L.A. a few years back, but L.A. was a little bit easier as far as that course is concerned. And the rest of his U.S. Open history, pretty checkered, wasn't actually very good. That had been his only good finish. You know, he had the win at the CJ Cup, which was pretty spectacular in the way that he closed it. But I think he won it like minus 30. So obviously that wasn't a course that I would think would be terribly comparable at all. So I don't know. I didn't fully trust him as like a full on 30 to 40% overweight the field. So I'm a little bit kicking myself on that one. Sam Burns was a guy that I really did like in that same price range. He was the guy that I did end up playing pretty heavily for the week, as well as
outright on him too at like 40 to 1, didn't you?
Yeah, of course. I saw you knew it wasn't going to happen. I don't hit outrights. I guess I should really dig more into like the each way. I need to find a site where I can get into the each ways,
because we're at least very limited in Minnesota as to what we have access to.
Yeah, I just don't really feel like digging into speculative sort of sites. We've had plenty of issues with those types of things over the years. So that was a good one. He was really, really well priced at 7,700. I thought that was an absolute steal for the way he had been playing. And he actually does have a pretty decent U.S. Open history.
Yeah.
He had nearly won it a year ago before things fell apart in the rain and the wet course, where he was hitting his second shot basically almost in like a puddle the way it was going. It was just a mess. He really should have had it a year ago. I felt kind of bad for him when JJ just kind of went in there and stole it away with a miracle putt. He was right there again. So I thought he was a pretty obvious play. What hurt me there is I trusted Patrick Reed at 7,900 instead of Wyndham at 78. And Reed was just not a factor at all. just too bad because he had been really good at both majors so far this season. Had a pretty decent history at the U.S. Open as far as making cuts and not a lot of finishes in contention. Although his best finish in U.S. Open history had been at Shinnecock back in 2018. So I was a little bit disappointed there in myself that I guess I just trusted Reed just for more experience in majors and better overall results than Clark. So that was where it hurt me because that's why I did own Reed in my lineup. Him and Cantlay were the two guys in the 7K range that absolutely punished me. Again, just, man, I can't seem to get Cantlay right. I need to just stick with like the five key courses where Cantlay plays well, including this week. This is a spot typically where he plays well. But if you just play him here, play him at like the stadium course, you know, the Amex, play him at like Harbor Town, you're okay. You play him at Memorial. You're pretty good. If you just stick to those handful of courses outside of that, then, you know, you're taking a little bit more risk, but yeah, that one killed me.
So a couple items for you, the $5 winning lineup that won 30 grand, Rory, Fleetwood,
wow,
Wyndham, Joaquin Neiman, Gary Woodland, Keith Mitchell.
Oh, wow. It didn't even have Sam Burns in it.
Did not have Sam Burns.
That's incredible. Yeah. Wow. that is. There were millionaire maker lineups that one was Scotty with a fourth place finish, which was pretty remarkable. If you would have told me last week, and I think we talked about it, we said, yeah, I don't think he's going to win. I think he'll be in contention, but he won't win. And if he doesn't win, it'll be challenging for him to be in a winning GPP lineup. But when every other guy in the like 9 and 10K range and up finishes completely out of it, they're not in contention at all, then it does open that door. When you get a Burns and Clark at 77 and 7,800, and then you get Tom Kim in there who we did mention on the show last week. I talked about him a little bit. I liked him at 6,200. Thought that was a little bit too cheap for the way that he has been playing a little bit better of late. So that you throw those three in with Scotty, and all of a sudden you've got the cap space to, you know, to pull off a pretty good team, so long as nobody else is in contention. And sure enough, almost beyond belief for me, like it's a little bit surprising that, you know, so many guys who were right there end up being denied. I mean, Xander was, you know, right there going into the weekend. Fitzpatrick is right there. You know, Oberg kind of made a charge at the end. You know, Fleetwood ends up finishing. You know, so these guys are all like outside of the top 10. Then you got Cam Young, who fell way, way back in the field. Morikawa is 17th. JT, 17th. So yeah, just none of these guys are in contention. Had even one of those guys been in the top five, Scotty would not have been in that winning lineup. But
the $25 millionaire maker was Scotty, Wyndham, Burns, Tom Kim, miracle shot, 2%, Keith Mitchell, miracle shot, 2%, and Jordan Spieth.
Yeah, if you found the courage to play Keith Mitchell and Jordan Spieth last week, then hey, you're good on you. I don't know what you would have been analyzing. I mean, and the crazy thing is,
Jordan Spieth, you won despite Jordan. I know. Spieth.
Despite, he finishes he finishes 56. So bizarre. It's surprising people were even really still with him, because his outside of Chambers Bay, U.S. Open has been not. And it's not an amazing spot for him. And then Keith Mitchell, he was all pretty much dead on arrival the first nine holes. He's plus six. And then he shoots the round of his life over nine holes on the back nine to get to 70. He shoots 70 all four rounds. First time in history that a player has shot 70 in all four rounds at the U.S. Open. Very unlikely finish, certainly. Far beyond anything else you'd ever would have expected him to do. Nothing you would have seen last week would have pointed at him as being a great play, other than low ownership. I guess that would have been maybe the only thing you'd have been looking at. So it's a couple of guys that were big factors on the GPP side had some pretty amazing comebacks. So Mitchell was one, and then Joaquin Niemann, who made an 11 on a par four on Thursday, was actually penalized 2 strokes for chucking his club, which is crazy. Haven't really seen anything like that before. But ridiculous. Yeah, ridiculous. Exactly. And typically when you see guys melt down like that, it just means they're done. They're done at that point. Usually they're giving up. They've had it. They're just going to get out of there for the weekend. Niemann locks in and goes just ballistic after that, ends up finishing in the top 10 for the week. I mean, you take out that one bad hole, he's your tournament winner. So, yeah, getting guys like Mitchell and Niemann through, players that were essentially dead on Thursday and then coming back to do really well. It was a very, very interesting week for the U.S. It's kind of the second year in a row we've had that at the U.S. Open. Because last year, you know, it was, you know, J.J. Spahn was up there. It was Sam Burns who was up there. Bobby Mack was up there in the mix. So it's the second year in a row with the U.S. Open where it hasn't been those star players. And maybe the weather had something to do with that a little bit. You know, the winds were really crazy.
They were tough
on Thursday. So that had everybody kind of scrambling a little bit.
I did want to get your take, though, on one thing, because I might be missing something. But what was the booing of Wyndham Clark? Is this all dating back to
I think it is.
He did in the clubhouse?
I think so.
Really?
I think so. Golf fans are just sour. I mean, they're sour, man. Like I see it everywhere with it. People don't forget stuff like that. Like,
I don't know. There seems to be a guy who once played that's done a couple things a little bit worse than throw a couple things in the clubhouse, but we fall all over that guy time again.
Oh yeah, dude, for sure. But yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. Even like with Patrick Reed, when he comes out to events, he's demonized. Oh, he's a cheater. He's a bad guy. He's, you know, he went to the live to all this sort of stuff. It's just hatred. It's just hatred. But yeah. Tiger's the one guy who can do absolutely no wrong at all and still have pretty much every golf rube out there cheering him on. So,
okay. So that I'm not missing that. That's what you
that's
think.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. It's just what happened at Oakmont where he tore up where he got pissy in the locker room. And yeah. I mean, there really hasn't been that much else. I can't really think of any other incidents that
no one follows it closer than us. I mean, we read this stuff all week, every week of the year, and I can't think of another reason why people don't like this guy.
I mean, he hazed the Canadian fans last week.
That would that make was people hilarious. Like him, I would think.
I love putting the jersey on. That's amazing, and then hitting it to 5 feet. That was brilliant. So yeah, they were booing him last week, which I was like, okay, yeah, it's fine, whatever. But yeah, it was a little surprised. I mean, they were kicking people off the course for being obnoxious yesterday. And good, I'm glad. Just throw idiots out of there. I'm so sick of these people. They bought a ticket, they can act like a complete fool on the course. So yeah, it was good to see some of these idiots getting tossed out. Because you see the guy, you see him win, and it's, you know, he's got a great backstory. You know, his mother passed away from cancer, and he was thinking about quitting the game, and she kind of told him to stick with it, and he did. And, you know, now he's a 2-time U.S. Open winner. His dad showed up and surprised him yesterday. That was super emotional. I always love seeing stuff like that. Everybody seemed extremely happy for him. I mean, beyond just like his girlfriend, tons and tons of people were out there happy for him, congratulating him. I think he's pretty good friends with a lot of the players. So if it's really just that one thing, I think that's kind of crazy. I think that's a little bit foolish, but you know, whatever. I mean, maybe he'll play into it. If he's smart, he'll just play into it.
I think so. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, we need some heels out there. Play it up to the crowd, you know, wave
just
at
pull them. Pull a WWE and just start saying, this is for all you haters, suck it.
Yeah. Put your hand up by your ear, kind of shake your head a little bit. I can't hear you, you know, kind of wave the other hand. Like, let's hear it. Yeah, I mean, you could. And you'd actually become more of a hero for people like us who
I think so. Yeah.
Kind of enjoy that routine. There's very few guys in the golf world that are actually willing to go that direction. But I think it's just it makes the game so much more interesting when you have those villains that are out there. And it's fun too, because he's not the type of guy who would be pinned to that role forever. You know, he could obviously turn babyface at any point again if he were to keep winning, and then become like a fan favorite like they do over on that side. But yeah, I don't know. It was a good event. He hit some clutch shots. He kind of held on when it looked like he was going to break. And so, yeah, it ended up being a reasonably entertaining Sunday for the U.S. Open.
All right, let's talk about this week's event. Travelers from TPC River Highlands. Really short distance-wise. It's a par 70, but it is only 6,835 yards. Bent grass / poa greens. They are usually pretty quick, and they are among some of the smaller ones on tour. We got wide fairways. So wide fairways, small greens. And we have seen bombers do well here in the past. We've also seen shorter hitters because it is a short course, but we have seen. I mean, remember Bubba did well here. DJ has done well here. Guys like that who bomb away. We've also seen more accuracy-based guys like...
You've seen Brian Harman do well here.
Brian Harman do really well. Russell Knox back in the day. Chez Riave every once in a while. So we have seen a mixture. It's a peat dye design, so we can take a look at some other peat dye courses. It's in the upper eastern area. Yep. So Keegan Bradley... We've seen win twice here.
Two-time winner.
What courses are you using for comp courses this week, Zachary?
I think we've got a pretty reliable set. I've got Harbortown, Sawgrass. You know, those are obviously other peat dye courses. I use Louisiana and the Stadium course because those are also peat dye influenced. I threw in Pebble Beach. I think that one fits real well. Sea Island, Sedgefield. Yeah, I think that's it. But yeah, I think those are all really solid. We have a ton of data for those. So yeah, those are what I pulled together.
Weather stacking is something that we have talked about for many years. Another form of stacking that we've talked about is skill set stacking. I talked a little bit about that in my article this week. Taking a certain skill set, whether it's long off the tee or excellent proximity to the hole type players, and grouping them together on DraftKings lineup, I think makes a lot of sense, especially on a course like this. Anything else that you're looking for in types of players or who to target this week, Zachary?
Not necessarily. Weather doesn't look quite as bad. Thursday, a little bit of winds in the afternoon. Remember, there's no cut this week, so it's not nearly as important. Friday, it looks like we could see some rain throughout the day, some gusty winds earlier in the day. Saturday, pretty calm. Sunday, pretty calm. So the weather looks like it should be pretty good. So I don't have near the issues on that one. One thing I've kind of noticed with this event is that course history is really strong here as an indicator compared to some of the other courses that you see. Like we kind of mentioned like Brian Harman before. I mean, you know, over the last, 8 years, he's got 7 top 10 finishes. I mean, that's tough to see. You don't generally see that repeated over and over and over again. Yeah, a guy like Cantlay, he's consistently really strong here every single year. So I do feel like this is a spot where if guys have a certain comfort level, it tends to translate. Maybe not entirely true. I mean, you see some guys up and down with their results, but I do think this is one where you do see course history being a little bit stronger of an indicator for success than maybe some of the other courses that we see on tour.
I agree. It's distinct, and that's just another reason to kind of not look at last week's result.
Right.
As far as something that's going to help you decide who to roster this week, entirely different type of course. Right. So don't let last week's result influence you very much as far as what you're doing this week. If a guy missed a cut last week, like a Cantlay, don't give up because this is more his style course. Although I liked him last week. So
yeah.
I won't say that last week wasn't his style course, but he's been really good here throughout his career. So don't let last week alone discourage you.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's a perfect spot this week to take advantage of recency bias, because there will be plenty of that for, you know, a lot of the good players that did not do so well a week ago, but they'll come right into here, and you'll likely see a lot of them be right there in contention again. So it's a great spot, much like Harbortown after the Masters. It's a good spot for guys to just bounce back immediately.
Let's take a look at the DraftKings pricing. Again, we're just gonna have Scottie Scheffler at a super high price, I guess. No adjustments made, despite the fact that he's not winning.
He's so down to 13.8, though. I mean, that does give you a little more leeway for players.
Yeah, but it only leaves you 7,200 left to complete your roster. They cut it off at 6K this week.
Yeah, it is challenging.
I don't love the options down there at 72 and below.
No, yeah, that's the tricky part. You don't have the guy at like 6,200 that really opens it up like it did a week ago. And I'm sure one or two of these guys will pop up and end up doing really well. It's just really challenging to isolate that particular group of guys that are down there.
Going with Scotty then, or are gonna stick with the fade Scotty strategy?
I likely will end up with a fade there, just because I just think week to week he isn't dominant enough this season for me, despite all of the great finishes, to pay off this sort of a price. And it took a lot of different things coming together for him to be on some of those optimal lineups last week. So I still think that I'd rather end up with two or three extra star players at the top who could contend here than to try to pin my hopes to Scotty. But I think it's easier to get away with this week too. So the reason I like it a little better than last week is, one, he's $1,100 cheaper, so that's a starting point. And then there's no cut this week either. So even if you throw one of these guys down here into your lineup in that lower 6K range and they're not amazing, you know, if you pay 6,200 for a guy this week and then you're with Scotty there, then, you know, then you're up to $7,500 per player for the rest of your team. And then you can get a little bit creative from that range, because there are guys that I think are probably pretty compelling plays within that mid to upper 7K range. So if you start out just by taking one risk on the low end, then all the rest of your guys, you know, you can fit a Brian Harman in there, you can fit an Alex Fitzpatrick in there, a Gary Woodland in there, one more guy around like 7K, and then you've got your team. So I just think it's a lot more doable, and I think there's a lot less downside than last week, where if you picked them, you still had to go find five guys at around 7,000 that were all going to, you know, make it through the cut. So, yeah, I do think there's a case for Scotty. I haven't decided if he'll be in the lineup in my core yet or not, but I feel much better about it if you do go that direction than I have probably over the last couple of months.
Other guys in this top tier: Tommy Fleetwood, 10-3, Xander, 10-2. Matthew Fitzpatrick, 10,000. Any of those guys interest you?
I think Tommy does. He seems to be pretty locked in. He hasn't quite gotten over the top. I really expected him to be in contention more this season. Didn't you expect him to be, if not, maybe not winning, but at least, you know, more often?
After he got the monkey off his back with the win, I thought we would see more.
Yeah, I kind of thought so too. But looking at his style of play, I mean, it's a great course for him. He seems like a very natural fit for what he does. He does well. I mean, as far as like, you know, his tee to green game, really sharp. Typically a guy who scrambles well, putts pretty well. So the short game fits. He was second here a year ago, lost an absolute heartbreaker to Keegan Bradley. And at that point, I mean, you just felt like, is this ever going to happen for this guy? And, but you know, he's still played pretty well of late, other than missing the cut at the PGA Championship. His play has been pretty strong. He was fourth at Memorial, 11th over the last couple of weeks. So he played pretty well at the US Open. So I think Tommy is in play for me. I think he's definitely rating out fairly well for me. Are there any of the other two that you like? Are you on Xander this week or Fitz?
Xander, my gosh, Xander.
Yeah.
Yeah, fine. He'll pop up one of these weeks, probably when I don't roster him.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He'll give you like an 11th or 12th place finish again this week and just a mild disappointment. I mean, he's a former winner here, but that's his only good result, really. I mean, he's got other top 20s, but if you're going to pay $10,000, you're not really all that excited if he finishes 19th or 14th or, you know, somewhere along that track. So it's tough. Fitz, this hasn't been a great spot for him over the years.
I don't know why.
Yeah, it seems like it would be, especially when his irons are this good. Off the tee has been a problem, but putter hasn't really been all that great. So maybe those indicators are enough to keep me away. I don't know
if I want Cam Young. I think people have probably soured a little bit on Cam Young.
Right.
9,600. Any interest? I kind of like it as a contrarian option up here.
I don't know. I kind of prefer him on longer, tougher courses than this one. I mean, there's going to be a decent amount of scoring this week. I like him on like the 7,300 to 7,500 range, where his off the tee game is something that he can take more advantage of, his long iron play. But that said, I mean, he's already won this year at a Pete Dye course. So, you know, he did win the Players Championship, but that was kind of his big crowning moment. So I don't know. I'm not sure. The last three events haven't been. I didn't really like what I saw at the PGA Championship. He didn't really look very good at Memorial. And then he didn't look particularly good at the US Open. So, you know, I don't know. I think I'm a little bit off of him at this point.
Going back to Sam Burns.
He's played well enough. I think you could make that argument, you know, because it's the track record has been long enough now at this point where it does seem to be more than just a passing trend. The only thing that ever really worries me is that he tends to be a little bit more reliant on his putter, but his iron play has really, really picked up. It's heated up over the last 16 rounds. He actually ranks third among this field in strokes gained approach. Really, the only area where he's had any sort of weakness is off the tee, and I think that might be minimized at a course like this. So I think Burns is somebody who would be in play for me there at 9,300. I do like JT at 91, three straight top 10 finishes at this event, and he's now had six straight top 25 finishes overall. And had a fourth place finish at the PGA Championship. He was very quiet, 17th place finish this last week. He's just played really consistently of late, and this has been a pretty good spot for him. So I would anticipate that string of good play will likely continue. I think Russell Henley is somebody you could probably look for a bounce back week. He was on my lineup last week, played pretty well in rounds 1, 2, and 4, fired an 80 in round 3 to just absolutely below his week apart and finished 65th. So that was a disappointment. But when you look at a guy like Henley, this should be a course that he's able to really light up. He's extremely accurate. His short to mid-range iron play in terms of precision iron play from anywhere from 150 yards and in has always been really good, pretty strong throughout his career as far as like short game play. He was second here a year ago too. So I think he's somebody who could certainly bounce back. And then I think 8,900 is a nice price for Patrick Cantlay. All finishes of 15th or better in 8 career starts. And yeah, like I said, there's like 5 courses where you can count on him every year. And if you just stick to those and ignore him for the rest, and you'll never get your heart broken on the DFS side there. So those are all guys that are like anybody else. Are you able to go back to Wyndham Clark and just kind of continue to ride this wave, or maybe a guy like Morikawa, anybody else there that you're thinking about?
I was kind of thinking Wyndham would be pulling out.
Yeah, I'm surprised he's here. That's actually a surprise that he's playing. And maybe that won't happen. But yeah, I mean, typically, yeah, you see guys win a major and then, yeah, they go and take a break the following week. I mean, Rory did and Rye did. So yeah, it's strange that he would continue to, you know, to be playing, but everything has been going extremely well for him. I don't know what it was. It just, the guy just flipped a switch and then all of a sudden everything completely came together. Number one in strokes gained, tee to green, or number one in strokes gained total over the last 16 rounds. And really every part of his game has been sharp. His irons are great. Short game is great. Yeah, I mean, if he hadn't won last week, I probably wouldn't hesitate. 9,400, you get a little bit of a jump there. Does make it a challenge. And this hasn't necessarily been his best event in the 8 years that he's played here. He only has one top 10 finish. But, you know, sometimes you just ride it out with a guy who's playing as hot as he has.
Keegan going to be massively on this week?
He might be. I mean, just on the fact that he's won here two of the last 3 years. And you hear about it as far as like motivation. And Keegan does have motivation here. He's a fan favorite up here. So I do think that he gets up for this event. Definitely more than a lot of other guys do. He just hasn't really hit the ball all that well this season. There isn't any part of his game right now that looks bad. It just, everything just looks kind of average. And then the results that he's had for the season, for the most part, I can't think, does he have a single top 10 finish on the season so far?
I can't think of one.
Let me pull that up. I mean, he's just always kind of hovering around like 20, 30th, you know, yeah, somewhere in that range. Yeah, he's 11. He's made 11 of 15 cuts, which isn't amazing. And he has four top 25 finishes and zero top 10s. Yeah, his best finish, he was 12th at RBC Heritage. So, I mean, hey, at least that's a comp course to look at. But, yeah, really nothing anywhere else that stands out. Yeah, and then just like stat-wise, everything is just not quite as good. Normally when he's really on his game, you see him great from tee to green. He's pretty strong off the tee. His iron play tends to be pretty strong. Neither of those are good at all this season. For the season, he's actually slightly negative for strokes gained approach. So yeah, I don't know. The story, the narrative would say, yes, he's in play and there's no cut this week. So there's definitely not a ton of risk if you do end up rostering him, but his play overall hasn't pointed to him being somebody that you'd expect to be back in contention.
Dropping down to the 7K range, which is where you're going to have to be, lower, mid to lower, if you're going to roster Scotty. Who are you targeting down here?
I guess I'll just play Brian Harman at 7,800. He's another guy who hasn't really been all that noteworthy for much of the season at all, but at 7,800, as long as he's not a complete disaster, I'm fine with that. You know, if he doesn't finish in the top 10, I guess it's not going to surprise me. But we know that that's his upside here. I mean, like a year ago, I'm sure there's been many years where we've looked at him here and said he's not really in all that great a form, and then there's a top 10 finish. And if you take that cut away, 7,800 is a pretty good price for somebody with, you know, top 10 upside, and, you know, maybe he finishes 25th or 30th or something like that. That's definitely not going to break your team. I think Alex Fitzpatrick for me at 7,700, he's probably going to be a play the rest of the season. Outside of, you know, kind of struggling at the PGA Championship, he's had all top 25, you know, from starting with his win, six top 25 finishes, most of which were at pretty challenging courses. So I guess I don't really anticipate him having that much trouble with this particular course. So I think both Harman and Alex Fitz are probably my favorite plays up there. Gary Woodland, boy, he just continues to play extremely well. Another guy who had a really rough start and then flipped a switch, won an event, and again, outside of the PGA Championship, he's had a really impressive run, including a seventh place finish at the U.S. Open this past weekend. So even though this hasn't necessarily been a spot for him throughout his career, you could look at the last couple of results that were just okay. And those are kind of times when he's been fighting injuries and that type of thing. So I think Woodland, Alex Fitzpatrick, Brian Harman, those are probably my favorite plays there. Anybody else that you're looking at in this middle area?
Well, one thing I just wanted to mention is be sure to look at the turf splits tool this week.
Yeah.
The Bent Slash POA, but some names up top here that I think make a lot of sense. I mean, Keegan's certainly up there. Brian Harman's up there. Patrick Cantlay is up there.
Yes.
All with good tournament history here. So I think it makes sense to look. There's a few names that are probably beaten down, like Minwoo Lee at 7,800. Sure. I think that's interesting play. He's missed a couple of cuts in a row. People are going to be off the bandwagon there. One guy I like, not in the 7K range, but at 6,600 is Ryan Fox, who has tremendous splits here. And he's been playing. His form has been pretty good lately. So I like him quite a bit as a cap saver down in the 6K range.
How about a guy like Eric Cole at 6,800? I mean, he had some of the best form on tour for, you know, four or five events. He had top 10 finishes there. Comes out first round leader a couple weeks ago in Canada, second round missed cut. So really just kind of one bad round over what, the last 12 weeks, really? You look at his history here, it's not amazing. He's 24th in 2023, 48th in 2024. He had a withdrawal last year, so I think he kind of throw that out, as that doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot to us if he was injured. But I think, I mean, you look at what he's been able to do here these last few months. So you look at him, you were mentioning the turf splits tool. He's got great splits as far as bent grass POA compared to other surfaces. The rolling stats, obviously he had the one particularly terrible round, but besides that, his irons have been good. His short game has been good. He ranks fifth among the field in strokes gained total over the last 16 rounds. And I think here, if we pull him up even further, he's fourth strokes gained total over the last 24 rounds. So I think he's another interesting play there. And again,
he is one of the most streaky guys you will find on tour. You just look at some of his results. Like I look at last year, he had a run T12, T15, T26, T18, T5. But before that, it was miscut, T50, miscut, 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 miscut.
Yeah.
It seems to happen. So I would like to know if his last dud was an indication that maybe he's done with his stretch here.
I know.
Because he at least goes T6, T31, second, eighth. So.
Yeah. It's been pretty impressive. Yeah. He's done that throughout his career. Remember when he first made it onto the tour, he was like that. He was hot and he played really well just about every week. And then he had a stretch of bad play where he was completely out of the DFS limelight again. But you kind of look in this range and there's not that many names for me. You mentioned Ryan Fox, who I think I also like right there. But like the rest of this range for me is extremely tricky. Have you seen enough of a guy like Ben James after his first couple starts? 23rd place finish this last week at the U.S. Open. He was obviously a second round leader up in Canada a couple of weeks ago. He's missed the cut here in 2022 and 2023, but he's a far superior player to what he was 3 years ago. I think that's a pretty decent price. I think there's a decent risk versus reward metric for the type of talent that he has shown there. So I could see getting behind him a little bit. Not a lot of other names that really stand out for me.
One interesting name is Jake Knapp, who came back last week after a two-month layoff, right?
Missed the cut.
missed the cut, but he expectedly played. He shot, like, I think he was six over after the first round.
Yeah.
And kind of out of it. But then he came back second round, shot a really, really solid plus one.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting to see, because he was having a fantastic start of the year before he was out. So he's a guy that it'd be nice to catch him on the uptick.
Boy, isn't it wild? He's at the same price as Hideki this week at 7,300, man. And I didn't have any interest in Hideki really last week as far as a guy that I thought would be anywhere in contention. And sure enough, he wasn't.
Not sure what's going on there.
No, I don't know. Yeah, he hasn't been completely terrible. He just really hasn't since Waste Management, when he melted down on the last hole.
Yeah.
That kind of broke him. It's been interesting to see guys like that. And then the guy right above him there at 7,400, same, almost the exact same season. Shane Lowry melts down at PGA National. Should have won there, finishing second. And then he's been garbage since then. So it's really strange to see the way that can almost paralyze some of these guys.
Yep.
Just one tough loss like that, and then they just can't rally back at all. But both names there were, it's just kind of surprising to see players like that down here. Do you any interest in a guy like Adam Scott, or can you play JT Poston again? I mean, is he for real now? I mean, he's only had one good finish at this event his entire career, but a fourth place finish at the US Open and a win at Memorial. I think you almost feel like you have to reevaluate what he's doing right now, because obviously he's found something in his game that he definitely hadn't had previously. And I don't know. There's not a lot of names that that I love right
now. No, here. Even like a Nikolai Højgaard, who I was high on all season. Yeah, I've kind of jumped now off that train just in time.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, you could go Bud Colley at 7,000. That's decent. Right. I think. Yeah. I wasn't expecting him to do anything at the US Open, but prior to that, he'd been effective. If he finishes somewhere in the 20 to 30 range, you're probably not too terribly disappointed with that. Is the Alex Smalley moment over? Has he crashed to the earth after his amazing run? I mean, this kind of feels like what we were talking about with Cole at the same price. You know, he misses the cut at Memorial in a small field and then misses the cut at the US Open. And all of a sudden you just start to think, feels like the clock has struck midnight. He may be turning back into a pumpkin now. But yeah, I don't know. Definitely a different style, of course, than where he's missed the cut in the last couple. So, you know, maybe an interesting play now that his ownership is going to come down. But you do start to wonder psychologically if he feels like, all right, I had my moment and, you know, that's that. But yeah, other than that, you know, the rest of this range is, I feel like you're kind of throwing a dart. You're taking a chance. And Jason Day has had some success here, but he was a withdraw last week. And we know what happens when Jason Day starts to withdraw from events. Definitely makes me a little nervous to try to figure out what's happening with him there. And yeah, the rest of this range, I can't say that there's anybody else that I'll be looking at all that closely.
As far as outrights go, I had a struggle because there is a lot in between that 15 and 25 range this week.
It's huge.
It really is. You like Sam Burns. Yeah, 20 to 1. You had mentioned Justin Thomas, who I really liked for an outright, only getting 25 to 1.
Right.
That kind of sucks. But you can get Cantlay. I don't know what you're seeing him at. I'm seeing him at 28.
30 at Bovada.
Yeah, that's not bad to me. That makes some sense there.
Yeah, a guy like Henley at 30 to 1. I think that's probably the range that you gravitate towards. I mean, nobody's betting Scotty anymore. Can't really bet Tommy, who doesn't win, you know. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I probably would stay away from anything 20 and less there. I just don't love.
Brian Harman's available at 50 to 1. That's not bad.
Yeah, I don't mind. I don't mind taking some shots on those types of players this week. It has been an event where we've seen plenty of more what you would predict guys winning it with Scotty and with Xander and even Keegan. I can't remember what his number would have been last year, but I'm sure with the way they've been locking down the odds, I'm sure it wasn't that crazy of a number overall. So, yeah, I think that mid range is probably pretty sweet as far as opportunities. I think, yeah, you know, guy like Fitzpatrick at 60, I think that's still a pretty decent number for him.
Yeah. Yep.
That's probably the range I would focus on, somewhere in that 30 to 60 range for the majority of my bets.
All right. Anything else to add before we conclude, Zachary?
No, I think that's it. We have kind of a interesting stretch here with the Travelers coming up, and then we kind of make the sprint here over the next few weeks towards the Open Championship in the middle of next month, and then we're back for the biggest event of the year here in the Twin Cities.
Scotty's going to be here.
Scotty, I know. I just hope there's at least one or two other solid names that make the trip, so it's not like Scotty
he might be 18,000.
I know. Yeah, it'd be Scotty at like 14,800, and then the next highest guy will be like 9,700 or something crazy. Like,
and that'll be Tony Finau.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah, that would be ridiculous. But that is actually what I see happening. Probably. I just don't think there will be that many stars that show up, and we'll see like a $4,000 price difference between Scotty and the next best player.
Yeah, probably. Well, with that, we will say goodbye for this week, this week's Travelers Championship. We wish you the best of luck. We'll be talking to you next week.
Good luck.